At Betway Casino, new customers stake £10 and get 150 free spins. Download the Betway Casino app today. 18 plus, T's and C's apply. BeGambleAware.org.
So many people believe that there is an expiration date on creativity, on renovation, on dreaming something new to existence. They think that if it didn't happen by a certain age, it's too late. Today's conversation challenges that belief completely and reminds us that sometimes the most meaningful work of our lives begin later, when we finally give ourselves permission to begin again. Now, before we begin, make sure that you're following The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi. And if this episode inspires you, please share it with someone who quietly wonders if it's too late to start over. Now, I'm very excited. My guest today is Paul Sherman. He's an actor, writer, producer, who after turning 60 made a bold creative shift, moving from performer in other people's work into writing, producing, and starring in his own. Now, his projects include the award-winning short film, Love Beijing, the stage play, Wrong Number, and the world premiere solo show, The Last Audition, which explores aging, memory, dementia, and the courage it takes to keep on going. Paul, thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm really excited to have you here. You know, please share with everybody a little about yourself.
Sure, Stacey. Thanks so much for having me on your show. I appreciate it. Yes, my name is Paul Sherman. I'm an international actor. I've acted the U.S., China, U.K., soon in Australia, my first time in Australia. As an actor, a lot of times, you know, I'm doing a lot of work here in China. There's many opportunities to do something called vertical dramas, which is a kind of a new thing on the market. So I'm staying busy. I'm a SAG after a member, equity for stage work. But creating your own work is something that I've never done before. And so recently I've started doing my own project. You mentioned Love Beijing was a short drama that we filmed in Beijing with Chinese actresses. And it is currently on a film festival tour, and also a play called Wrong Number, which was fun. It's a very short play, but it was very, very dramatic, lots of fun. But what I'm currently doing is The Last Audition, which is a show about an older, of course, I'm starring in it. I wrote it for myself. So it's an older Shakespearean actor who comes to the stage to audition for King Lear. It's his last opportunity to do this show. And he's going to show everybody that he can still do it because he's dealing with some early signs of dementia. His daughter's trying to get him into an assisted living place and he's resisting going. But what we find out is maybe this audition is just all in his head. I don't know. So you'll have to come to see the show if you want to learn more about that. But we are doing, we're taking it first to Adelaide Fringe Festival, which opens up February 20th. It goes through March 22nd. Then we're going to New York City, the New York's Frigid Fringe. And that's April 1st through April 20th. Then finally, we go to the king daddy of all fringes, the Edinburgh Fringe in Edinburgh, Scotland. And that is August 7th through the end of the month there. So that I'm very excited. It's a play that I've written. I'm starring in it. And this is my first time going to the Fringe, first time doing a world tour. And I'm not a spring chicken. So I'm excited, but scared to death. Embracing the fear. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Now, Paul, I want to start this with the idea of renovation. You didn't stop creating, you expanded. After 60, you shifted from being just an actor to generating your own work. Like, what was happening internally that made you realize that it was time to begin a new chapter?
Well, I was, like I said, I was doing a lot of work here in China, vertical dramas. They're amazing, amazing opportunity as an actor. Anytime you can get in front of a camera and be comfortable with that set. In America, when I was doing union work there, I worked in Atlanta and New York City. Doing auditions, doing jobs are few and far between as a professional actor, unfortunately. Well, not for everybody, but for some, working is not something that you're doing all the time. And to be comfortable in front of the camera, you have to do it all the time. Now we're doing, you see behind me, I've got a kind of a setup for doing self-tapes. So we're doing camera at our home, but it's not the same as when you're on set, when you have the lights and the boom operator and the all the directors, and they're doing basically, when you're an actor on set, they're worried about all that technical stuff. The actor is expected to have their stuff together, so when they call action, you go. There's no rehearsal, there's no preparation, there's no usually no even direction until maybe do the second take or something. But so to be ready, you have to be familiar with that, with everything that's going on. So doing all of these jobs, I've done nearly 30 vertical dramas here in China. It gives me the opportunity to be very familiar on camera, very familiar with all of that. In fact, a lot of that, and because you're so focused on the other actor, that kind of goes away, and you don't even pay attention to it anymore. And that's the benefit of doing it over and over. So I love that, but it's like a soap opera. It's very dramatic, very melodramatic, and very over the top kind of acting. And so it's not something that I really want to do when I grow up. So I am writing my own material to challenge myself as the actor. So the play that I wrote, the last audition, is it's very tender. I wouldn't say, I mean, there's serious overtones, but it's still, there's comedy there. There's still drama, but it's not over the top. Everything is very subtle, and the reaction on the audience, it's only 1 hour long. It's a very typical for a fringe festival to be an hour. So it's very emotional ride, and I'm very proud of the writing that went into it. And we're getting there with the production quality as well. I'm excited to get this in front of the audience. The first audience that we have, we'll be doing a couple previews here in Beijing, and then taking it on to Adelaide. So I'm excited to see how the people in Adelaide respond. And of course, doing Shakespeare in New York City, that's a little nerve-wracking, but I'm excited to give it a go. So,
I love that. That's amazing.
yeah.
Now, there's a cultural message that renovation is only for the young. Why do you think it's so important to challenge that? And why do you think that people gain creativity and emotionally when they allow themselves to reinvent themselves later in life?
Well, it's yeah, I mean, when you're retired, I'm kind of semi-retired, it gives you I mean, when you're younger, I think it's actually harder to do reinvention. It's harder to because you have a job, you have a career, you have a family, you have kids, you have responsibilities. There's things that tie you down. But the problem mentally when you get older in doing that is that, you retire from the job, and you get the Netflix subscription, and you sit down and you putter around in the garden. You do this or do that, but it seems to be the end of your responsibilities. And so I wouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people tend to stop. There are many instances that I found that, people, they retire and then they, have serious health problems or other kinds of problems. What happens is that the transition from having a career to not having a career is very disruptive. And so by reinventing yourself, it kind of, think, I would advocate for people to think about this time, not just a time to relax, because you're going to work every single day, and now all of a sudden you're not doing anything. There needs to be an activity that you involve yourself in. And it doesn't have to be as crazy as mine, writing material, but taking up whether it's painting or pottery or travel. There's all these opportunities, all these things that you do. Of course, I'm from a huge travel background. I used to be a flight attendant. I own a travel agency as well. So there's, I always advocate for people to travel during their life, not to wait until they retire. It shouldn't be something that you wait to do. Do it now, while you're still young. The typical picture of the old couple who has fallen asleep on the gondola in Venice, because they're old. It's the time to do the romantic Venice gondola ride is when you're, younger. And so just go and travel, but have that ability to reinvent yourself. Plan for it when you're retiring. Plan for that inevitability of having gone from a busy life to a sedentary life. So I'm choosing to do that with writing. That's my creative outlook outlet, and doing a world tour. How do you do a world tour? Talk to me in 6 months and I'll tell you, because I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along. It's just something that I'm learning as I'm doing. So just embrace the fear of not knowing how to do it. So I once my kids and I little digression here, sorry. We were building a barn, and my kids, my two boys came out to help me, and they're like, "Dad, we can't do this. We never built a barn before." And I neither have I, neither have I. So we figured it out, and we built a 3-horse barn, and pretty soon we got a barn. You just because you haven't done something doesn't mean you can't do it. So
Exactly.
embrace it.
So true. Now you move
No.
from performing roles to creating worlds, writing, producing, and starring in your own work. How did that shift change your sense of agency, ownership, and creative freedom?
Oh my gosh. Doing your own material, something well, I mean, you don't have to write for yourself. I've done other things and written for other people, but figure out, for me as an actor, writing something that I wanted to be in, was a huge shift, because this was it's a gift to myself. It's opportunity to have, a quality story. I am not, I mean, oftentimes you'll get work material from other people. They're all about making the money. And today the things that make money are the outrageous, like the vertical dramas. They're melodramatic. It's not something that I want to do. So if I'm writing for myself, it may not be as commercially viable, but I don't, I mean, I want to do it because it's good, but it's also satisfying to me as well. When I go to Adelaide, the Adelaide Fringe, there's going to be a lot of circus acts, there's comedy acts, there's cabaret, there's all sorts of razzle dazzle shows. And my show, is not that. It's a serious play. I mean, it does have comedy. I don't want to rule that out, but it does have comedy. But it's basically a serious play about an old guy and dementia and his relationship with his family. You're going to walk out and you're going to feel good about it, but don't look for the razzle dazzle because you won't find it in my show. And that's the story. I know if that's what you want to write, if you want to write a razzle dazzle show, then by all means, do that. But that wasn't something that I wanted to be in. So I'm doing this, the last audition, Shakespearean actor. So,
I love
yeah.
it. I love it. Now, the last audition explores memory, aging, and dementia, themes that are deeply personal, and for so many families, it's heart-wrenching. How did writing about these experiences transform your understanding about family, caregiving, and legacy?
Yeah, oh, good question. My great friend in the United Kingdom, when I visit her, we go to see her mom, and I've known her mom for ages. She's now dealing with dementia. Dementia is a subsection of, I'm sorry, Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's is a subsection of dementia. So affects you, I mean, her tremendously. We went to see her and she said, she's going to ask you questions, the same question over and over. And I mean, she's just a lovely lady, and she was so excited to see me. But then she, looks into me in the eyes and then she asked me this question. I forget what it was. And we talked about it for a while. And a few minutes later, she asked me the same question again with the same. She had no idea that we had just talked about this. A few minutes later, she asked me the same question again. It was, I mean, it's kind of, it could be funny but it's my friend who's living through this. It's her mother who's dealing with this on a daily basis. She would do all of these different meals. I mean, I mean, bless her, the mom is still living on her own and taking care of herself, and she and her sister are taking care of their mom, but she has the dignity of being able to live by herself. But they'll write like a note, like here's, they would give her lots of different meals. They would prepare all this and write a note saying, eat the yogurt and eat the apple or whatever, said. Well, then they would come back and like all the food was gone. What happened? Well, they realized that she would read the note and eat the stuff, and then she'd go and forget and look in the refrigerator again and see the note and do the thing. So she was eating all this, prepared food in one day where it was meant to last, several days. And that it's just real sad to watch somebody that you love and care for going through that memory loss. I actually, the reason why I came back to China, I lived here for a while in Beijing. I worked for the Universal Studios in Beijing, and worked in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter doing the Ollivander role, which we actually performed in Chinese. I was, speaking Chinese and doing this short show in the, I was a wand keeper in the Ollivander wand shop. And but all the Chinese that I learned was all about wizards and wands and stuff. It wasn't really practical. So when there was the actor strike and the writer strike, I thought, well, let me go back to China and learn, useful Chinese. And but part of the reason why I did that is because I've heard that learning another language is a great way to make sure that you don't have to deal with dementia. It's, using your brain. So I thought, well, let me go learn Chinese. So and then came here and met my wife, and so I've been here ever since. But that was the impetus on coming back here to learn another language. It was because of my fear of eventually or possibly having dementia. Learning all these lines, doing all this creativity. Hopefully, it's keeping my brain active so that I'm keeping dementia at bay. But dementia is a there's they say that by in the next 10 years, I might get my statistics wrong, but by 2035, the number of dementia cases will double
Wow.
in the world. And so it's definitely something to worry about. It's definitely something to concern ourselves about it. And I mentioned my friend in the UK who's taking care of her mom. The number one people that are affected are the caregivers, whether that's a professional caregiver or a family member. Those are the unsung heroes. Those are the people that we need to stand up and applaud because they're doing the hard work that's behind the scenes, the people that you don't see usually. So bless them for their compassion and ability to deal with that day in, day out. I don't know how they do it. It's amazing. So.
It is amazing, and it is very hard to be a caretaker. People don't realize what caretakers do go through, but it's a lot to take care of a loved one, especially when you feel so powerless. It's like you can't. The only thing you can do is comfort them, care for them, love them, and give them as much encouragement as you can. But to be there and to have to watch them and not be able to take a magic wand and make it go away is very hard. And then you're fitting in your schedule, taking care of another person's life, along with all the other responsibilities in your life is very difficult. It definitely is very difficult.
I heard of a phrase recently, and evidently it's kind of a growing trend, kind of a triple decker, where basically you're a mother taking care of your kids, but you're now also taking care of your parents or a parent. So you have care on both sides, and just being a mom is a tremendous amount of work, but then to have to take care of a parent at the same time, and it's I mean it's you as a as the child excuse me, you as the child, you don't expect to take care of your parents. They're the ones who took care of you. But it's also the humility of being a parent, being someone who has been the caregiver all of a sudden turning around and taking care of their or having to be taken care of. And I think that's why our character in my play resisting his daughter's attempt to put him into an assisted living. My wife is going through that now with her father, who's 87 years old. And we're going to be both together in Adelaide for 30 days, and she's trying to get her father to go to this assisted living while we're gone, and wants nothing to do with it. And I can understand that, but at the same time, you have to make sure that they're taking their medication, they're being taken care of. If they fall, that there's somebody there to pick them up. So,
And it's very humiliating for them. I know many people who get older and their family now needs to take care of them, and it's very hard for them to accept that. It's very hard for them to accept that they, even with dementia, they do remember certain points of, depending on what stage you're in, what they used to be and what they are now. And that's very hard for them to accept. Now, many people go through profound experiences but don't know how to transform them into something meaningful. How do you turn personal challenges into creative work that resonates without losing honesty or heart?
Well, there's, I'm doing this play about Shakespeare. Talk about universality. I mean, Shakespeare is still relevant today, even though he wrote in the late 1500s. So how do you make it? Universal is make it honest, make it truthful. Don't try to, make it glamorous or just tell the truth, and people will see that themselves in that work. I'm hoping that when people come to see the last audition, that they see themselves, or they see their own fear towards dementia, or they feel see them their own parents, that sort of thing. I mean, I don't want people running away from the show, but certainly to be able to see themselves in the character that's on the stage, I think there's always it the play, the film, the TV show, the book, whatever it is, will always transcend time if it really tells the truth. And so tell the truth.
I love that. Now, there's something incredibly vulnerable about stepping into a stage alone. What did it take emotionally and artistically to commit to a solo show? And what did you discover about yourself through this process?
Wow, yeah. The yeah, it is. It I wrote another play. I wrote a play, kind of a father son. I was divorced. My children were greatly affected by the divorce. I think divorce is just horrible, on the kids especially. We always say kids are resilient. Yeah, they are, but it's like, you send your kids off to war, they're going to be affected, and divorce can be a bit like war. And so I wrote a play about a father-son relationship. It was very honest, very heartfelt. I really wanted to do it, but the practicality of doing a two-person show, if I did it in Adelaide and then took it to Edinburgh, which was the original plan, then I would have to worry about finding an actor that could do it in Adelaide, time to rehearse, all of that stuff. Plus the, and it's th these things are so expensive. I mean, to do, I'm doing transportation, housing, paying for the venue, just all the advertising. Oh my gosh. I mean, hopefully I'll make money back with the ticket sales to break even, but you have to be ready to lose money on the prospect. But to add to that, to another actor, having to fly them, here, there, it was just not practical. So I decided that I would write a story with just one person. I have never done a solo show before. I've never been the only person on stage for the whole time. I've done major roles where I'm predominantly, the main, or the one on stage, but I've never done a solo show, which I walk on at the beginning. It's all me. I mean, there's other characters in the show, but they're basically, voiceover. So there's different, there's my daughter on the phone. There's, the stage manager and different people that come in as voiceovers. So there's other people to react to, but predominantly it's me. And one, it's a lot. It's a lot to memorize. It's a lot to, have that focus on me the whole time. It's a blessing to have another character there, to have another actor to react to and play off of. Plus, you're only doing a portion of the lines, not all of them. So it's just, I do a portion. I do different play, even though it's an audition for King Lear for him. He does do Hamlet and some Macbeth and other Shakespeare plays, little snippets from different ones. I mean, he's been a Shakespeare actor for a long time, so he's got a lot of Shakespeare in his head. But it's yeah, it's just I think that's the big thing with doing a solo show. It's all you. It's, and so yeah, so I better have my stuff together, you know. And a lot of these times you're not only doing the show itself, you're going out. They do it in, it's very famous in Edinburgh and the Royal Mile, where people are flyering people, you know, saying, "Hey, come see my show, come see my show." And you're talking about your show, you know, several hours before your show starts to try to get them to come see your show. So it's a big part of the whole atmosphere, but it takes a lot of time and energy. So not only are you doing your show, but you're out there advertising for your show, talking to people. So you have to be, you have to prepare your voice to be able to not only sustain yourself through the hour-long show, but the talking beforehand, you know. I'm excited about the whole aspect of talking to people on the street. You know, of course, nobody likes to try to sell people things, you know, here, buy my, you know, come see my show. But to talk to people, we're actually doing something here in Beijing that I won't be able to do on the rest of the tour, but we're doing a kind of afterwards, a Q&A, that I'm excited about because we do the show and then afterwards we'll you know do a kind of a talk back, you know, talk to people about, you know, about dementia and about, you know, about the aspects of the show that affected them. I wish we could do that during the run as well. Maybe there might be a opportunity to say, "Hey, meet me over the this bar for a beer, you know, over here for a coffee, whatever." You know, maybe there might be those opportunities, but that excites me to talk to people about these things. You know, because I love to learn, and so I wrote a play about dementia. It doesn't make me, you know, an expert on dementia. I've learned a lot, but you know, I don't know your story. I don't know what you've gone through, and I'm very interested to hear. But yeah. Does that answer your question?
It does. And
I hope it
it's
does.
a
I hope
great
it
answer.
does.
Now, for someone listening right now who feels stuck, uncertain, or afraid that it's too late to pursue something new, what would you say to them practically, and honestly about beginning again?
If you're waiting for permission to do it, I'll give it to you. Just go do it. Just do it. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, there was I remember reading a story about a woman who was 55 years old, and she had always wanted to be an attorney, and but you know, she's married, taking care of her husband. Her husband passed away. Now she's 55, talking to her friend, saying, "Well, you know, I've always dreamed of being an attorney." You know, law school's 3 years. I don't, you know, I'm just too old to do that. So her friend says, "Well, law school's 3 years. So at 55, if you start law school when you got out, you would be 58. If you don't start law school in 3 years, you're going to be 58. So you can choose now to be 58 with a law degree, or be 58 without one. You know, it's a simple choice. But do the thing. I mean, think about you know, this is taking me, you know, when I finish this, it will be you know, almost a year from the time that I started. And a whole year of doing this world tour. And if things go well, if I, you know, meet people and have other opportunities, I very well may do a world tour in 2027 that might be even more expanded. And you know, so that's, 2 years out of my life, but everything that I learn and everything that I, all the people that I meet and all the opportunities that I have, that will, make me, create an opportunity that in 2 years' time I wouldn't have if I just sat at home and did the Netflix thing. So just get out there and do it, whether it's, some, a college degree or a master's degree or a PhD or traveling the world or biking across the US. I mean, I did my dream when I left Beijing the first time was doing the Appalachian Trail. I did part of the Appalachian Trail. I did part of the Virginia Trail. And so one day I'm hoping that I will make the time to do the entire thing. It goes from Georgia all the way up to Maine. But hiking the Appalachian Trail, I mean, if that's what you want to do, there's there's all sorts of places to go see and do. I once I'm from Portland, Oregon originally, and I remember I was when I was a flight attendant working, somebody was like, "Oh, Portland, Oregon, you must know blah 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 blah," and rambled off a couple things in Portland that he knew, places that he had gone. I'm like, no, I haven't been there. People don't visit their own town. Be a tourist in your own part of the world and see it like a tourist and be a tourist for the day in your own town. People just don't, go and see and do it, the things that they can do. New York City, people are famous for that. They don't want to go where the tourists are, so they don't do it. But just be a tourist for, a few days and see your city, wherever that may be. So.
I love that. Now, Paul, what stands out to me is that your story isn't about chasing youth. It's about honoring your experience. It's proof that creativity doesn't fade with age, that it actually gets deeper and it deepens. If there's one truth you want listeners to carry with them after this conversation is over, what would that be?
Well, I think that, and I recently wrote some little articles that I posted on my LinkedIn page about the myths of aging. About I in fact I read an article about 7 myths of growing old. But what resonated for me was that not only that these myths are wrong, but what happens when society believes them? What happens when, oh, well, yeah, when you get older, it's harder for you to learn. Well, that's a myth. Oh, when you get older, you're gonna start forgetting things. That's a myth, But what happens when you believe these things? What, you believe that your body is gonna, I mean, look at Dick Van Dyke from Crimey's Sake, he 100 years old and he's still going, And so we have the capability to be better when you're older, to be more alive. Now, when I was younger, when I was a younger actor, I was actually, I mean, it happens a lot when you're younger, you're cast to be an old man. And so I found the number one thing that can make you old, or make you appear old, is to have pain in somewhere in your body. And so I actually went to a chiropractor and talked about back pain. And so I acted as though my back was really bad. And yeah, sure enough, I looked like I was old, So take care of your body. And when I was hiking the Appalachian Trail, I was very careful, because I knew that if I slipped and fell, my father had a hip replacement, and we had a walker and everything. I mean, it's just it's you're very close to having an accident, and that accident could cause you to age tremendously over a short period of time. So be careful, but that means also to have a strong body. Swimming is a great exercise because it's a non-compact, and so you're less likely to injure yourself in the process. I started a running group. I wanted to have a goal of running a marathon, and so I did. But I had trouble accomplishing that goal. So I started a running group. Jeff Galloway is amazing runner, marathoner, Olympics and everything. But his thing is a run, walk, run. Very easy. A lot of people that run have this mentality that, well, if you're not, people that run, walk, you are not real runners. You're not a real runner unless you could sustain your running. Well, that's a bunch of crap. Excuse me. But the run, walk, run method, which he happily employs, Jeff Galloway, says you got to, heal yourself. And so by running, having a period, it could be 30 seconds. You run for 30 seconds, walk for 30 seconds, run for 30 seconds, and just doing it, whether it's a minute or 2 minutes or whatever, but you're giving your body a break. While you're doing this. But the point I wanted to make was there were some people in my running group that just felt it just feels too easy to do the run, walk, run. It feels too easy, like you're taking them. So they would like, well, what if we just did more? We just, pushed ourselves and did more. I said, well, just stick to what Jeff says. Just do that. The people that did more ended up getting injured. And they didn't complete the marathon. And those of us who just stuck to the program were able to accomplish and finish the marathon. That was the goal. It wasn't to do it quickly. It was just merely to accomplish the goal, which was to cross the finish line. And the benefits of that is that you, because of the healing process as you're going, you're also going to be walking that week after you do the marathon, as opposed to many people who run the marathon are laid up in bed for a week while their body is healing from the whole process. So be gentle to your body, be careful with your body, but that means to keep it active and keep it healthy. And well, getting lots of sleep, drinking lots of water, eating foods in the US are incredibly inundated with all sorts of things that are illegal in many parts of the world, the many parts of the world that are more concerned about health than money. So figure out what's in your food. And just because something looks healthy doesn't mean that it is. Because you never know what's in it. Don't eat packaged food. Eat fresh foods. Eat organic. I sound like a health guru, but I'm really not.
It's
It's just
so
there's
true.
I mean, take care of your body and take care of your brain and take care of your spirituality. It's all connected.
I love it. I love it. Now, you are an international actor and you have a film festival going on, and you'll be traveling soon and you'll be doing a lot of different acting events in different countries. Can you tell us a little about that?
So my film Love Beijing, which is a short film, it's actually a film, a kind of autobiographical about my wife and I. My wife is Chinese and she speaks very little English. I'm American. And I've studied Chinese, but I still speak a little bit. So one time I was visiting a friend of mine in Beijing, and she's a French filmmaker, and she was like, "How do you do this, you and your wife? I mean, how can you communicate? She doesn't speak English. You don't speak Chinese. What do we?" So we figure this out. We also have This is like a translator that doesn't require Wi-Fi, because here in China, the VPN, the Google Translate is a big thing, but China doesn't like Google or vice versa. So we
Yeah.
have a translator that we can use for more difficult things where she's learning English, I'm learning Chinese, so we're working on those. But the comment really kind of struck me. It was like, how can you? And I thought about, it's like love. Love is, I think, transcends language. There's many couples out there that either started out or eventually they learned each other's language, but maybe they didn't at the beginning. And so how do you? So it, of course, it takes patience, to have a desire to just say something. You
Yeah.
have to be willing to wait for this, translator. I mean, it's pretty quick, but
Yeah.
some people just don't have the patience for that.
Right.
So I wrote a script. I actually wrote it. I was on the train from Beijing. I live in a town called Shenyang, which is in the northeast of China. So it's about a 3-hour train ride, and in that 3 hours, I basically wrote this script, with Love Beijing, and it's about an American, older American. I wrote it for myself to be in, and I'm a tourist in Beijing, and I'm actually looking at a map, trying to figure out where am I going to go, and I meet this young Chinese woman, who is a tour guide, and so she's just gone through the scene with her mom. Her mom, of course, is Chinese, and her mom, we don't find out why, but her mom's living with the daughter, and the daughter's like frustrated because the mother, is just driving her nuts. It's her apartment, it's a girl's apartment, and a mom is like, oh, I just need to, get my mom out of here. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And then her tour cancels. So on top of all the frustration with her mom, there's frustration about the tour, her job canceling. So she sees this American looking at the map and like, can I help you? And her English is really good. I mean, she's Chinese, but her English is because she's a
Yeah.
tour guide. And so she's talking to this guy, and and they end up doing the whole weekend, just going here and everywhere. You see them, the Great Wall of China, the Forbidden City, and all the sites in Lama Temple and everything in Beijing, all the things to do. So they go on the tour for the weekend, and it's like, oh, this is great, but we didn't get we didn't get to see everything. So
Right.
what are you doing next weekend? Oh, I'm busy. And the girl invites him out to dinner, and he's like, ah, I could be your father, So we're thinking that, this is a, either she or he, or you have designs, because the older guys are always going for the younger women, right? So
Yeah.
that's what you think is happening here. But no, I'm gonna have dinner with my mom on Friday. Why don't you come over? So he goes over and meets the mother, and the daughter has to go to the shop and get something. And in the meantime, he pulls out his translator, and they're talking. The daughter comes back, and they're just laughing, having a great time, Well, 6 months later, they end up moving out together. And so now the end of the story is the daughter's all alone and going, oh, I wanted my mom out, and now I got what I
Yeah.
wanted. And now anyway, it's a real cute story and has a little twist. The twist is the fact that the guy isn't a predatory old man like some are. So he ends up having a great relationship with the older Chinese woman who doesn't speak very much English, and he of course doesn't speak Chinese. So they figure it out. So
I love
a
it.
little romance there. So love
I love it.
Beijing, yeah. So yeah,
I love
but
that. Now, where can
yeah.
people find you?
Well, I have a site. So my actor website is paulshearman.com. Shearman is spelled with Shearman. So paulshearman.com. And then if you look on there, there's the last audition. There's a tab for that, just all about the play, with links to go and buy a ticket and follow the tour. And then just and then there's all my contact information there. I also have Paul Shearman Actor. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and then you can find me. I think it's just Paul Shearman on LinkedIn. So I'm doing all the things.
I love it. I love it. This has been
yeah.
amazing. Paul, I love your story. Not only are you an actor, but you really are an advocate to motivate others to realize that no matter what age you are, you're never too old to do the things you want to do in life. That, the change is possible at any stage of the game. Because many times people, want to try something new. I'm like, oh, I'm too old. It's too late to change and try something new. And it's really not. And you're proof of that. And your story is very encouraging. It's very motivating, and it's a wonderful story. And I can't wait to see your show and to really you really because you'll be out in the New York area. You'll be in my area too. So yeah. So I look forward to that. And I really thank you so much for being on the show. I think, I love the fact that you really, talked about the topic of dementia because it's so prevalent in our society. And I love the fact that you brought up the caregiver, and everything they go through because they're really people don't think about the caregiver and they go through a lot. And just the, you tap into lots of different types of acting, even with the comedy. That's hysterical, so I really enjoyed this conversation. I enjoy what you're doing. I think you're doing a wonderful job, and I commend you for deciding to take a change and going for it. Anything that you feared, you kind of attacked it and you went for it and you succeeded. And that's a great example to show others. I really appreciate you, and I thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I love it. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for being on our show. Thank you so much.
And I'll see you in New York.
You'll see me in New York for sure. Definitely.
All right.